Hello, come in. Lie down. Relax. Take a deep breath in. And now breathe out. We'll be your therapists today. You're listening to Triathlon Therapy.
That's too much time. Look at Steve McKenna. Steve, what are you doing, Steve? That's too much time. Advantage Reed.
Faithful listeners of the Triathlon Therapy podcast, we are back. And I've got with me super coach, RPG coach, who's now actually giving himself a bit of a tan as he heads off to Hawaii, Clint Rowlings, and the nerdiest of all nerds, Stephen Ulch, the marathon extraordinaire. How are you, Steve? How
McNuggets,
are you, Clint?
McNuggets.
I'm good, mate. Yeah, tanning up for Hawaii. And Stephen, well done on Sydney before we start frothing out on triathlon.
Yeah, so let's. I was thinking we can get to Steve's marathon. We'll talk about Apo's race. We can talk a bit about Sunny Coast towards the end of the show. But obviously, the big news and the hottest topic in triathlon at the moment is the Ironman World Championships in Nice. What a race. Before we even start, I am so bummed that this won't be a World Championships course going forward. I know everyone loves Hawaii. I've always argued that I think for the pros, it's really good to mix up the courses. You enable other people to have great races. It's about as fair a course as you can get out there. I just was so impressed with the top guys and their ability to ride. There's no hiding on that course. We can talk about that a bit more, but Clint, how'd the swim? It was, I guess for most athletes, it sort of turned out a bit expected. Obviously some very fast swimming. I'm still absolutely flabbergasted that no coach is getting their athletes to test their blood lactate levels with their sleeves over their shoulders versus not. Because as we know, it does make swimming a lot harder. But I guess the big news, Clint, in the swim, Sam Laidlow.
Yeah, it was a weird one. I watched from the start, and first thing I've got to say is Patrick Lang's like leopard print dressing gown thing that he had on before the start of the race. Like, I always thought he was a very serious individual. But if you're going to rock up, he looked like a 1960s drug dealer. It was awesome. But there was a method to his madness, right? Like, they're such lean individuals. It was pretty cool on the morning from what we could see. And some of the guys are just standing in their swim skins. Others are looking like old drug dealers in their big fur coats. And then they get in the water, start swimming super hard, obviously, at that race. And not too far in, Laidlow was getting lower back spasms. Very interesting read. We've spoken about it a fair bit with wetsuits in the past, but he literally stopped and he was on the side just bobbing away. He got it back together and swam easy on the back of like Christian Hogenhaug's group, which was back a little bit, but the pace was on. It was wild. Like, Jamie Riddle, Martin Van Riel and Jonas Schomburg were like swapping off, going berserk. I don't know if Jamie Riddle was looking for, and if you guys saw this, but through the swim, he was like, it was like ITU pace. They were raging. But then after a while, he just started doing backstroke and he was looking through the group for someone. It might've been Laidlow because he'd been spending a bit of time with him, like to check if he'd actually, one, who was there, obviously, and two, to see if he was there. So maybe he knew something. Like, if you look back at, maybe he did know that Sam was having some issues or whatever, but he literally did backstroke, had a look around the group, swam next to people and was like swimming with his head out, looking who he was next to. It was pretty amusing, but man, they got stuck in. It spread out like it wasn't this clumped group. It was just an arrowhead and they were just swapping off, going berserk.
Well, saying that, I reckon if Jamie Riddle and Martin Van Riel were in Kona last year, there's no way I would have made the front pack. He's a freak.
Yeah, this is one of the things I was like hypothesizing while we're sitting there, right? And like watching that swim split and it literally went one line and like, they went around that first turn and Riddle went right deliberately to try and split the group. He took the group that way and then he just gassed it and came back across to the main group. Like, there was some silly buggers being played, which is great. And you do have to wonder, like, Ditlev got out of the water with like very close, and like for everyone, they would have been like, oh man. But you've got to wonder, a really big individual. Yes, he's been working on his swim a lot, but how hard are they swimming to stay with those guys? Like, is it really worth? That was one of my questions for both of you guys, and like, put yourself in that scenario. Is it worth like just flogging yourself on a course like that, where you're not just trying to make that group to get out of town at like to Harvey with them? Is it really worth just going to the limit early on and through for the duration of that swim?
Yeah, see, for in my mind, I think the Norwegians play it the smartest. I don't understand on a. I understand in Hawaii sometimes where you know that there is a massive advantage with the less uphill sort of course. There's a lot of rolling hills, of course, but there's a big advantage being in that front group with the media, with other great riders. And then I would have thought with a course like that, I would have thought, there is so much time to just. Put your power down on the bike and set yourself up. So, yeah, I guess in my mind, Clint, I think it depends on how the ability of the swimmer. Like, it's hard to know who's made that front group without completely going anaerobic and who hasn't. Yeah, I think it's a risky move, sort of playing that card. But yeah, maybe Riddle was looking around for Patrick Lang. He's going to reliably run, 2:30 potentially on the marathon, and that might have been what he was looking at, like trying to shake guys like that, maybe trying to shake Gustav.
Yeah, so
Yeah.
when I saw it, I thought he was just looking to see how much damage he had done, just to make sure, like, just to see, oh, do I need to get rid of more people? Are they still there? Because if I had his ability, I'd definitely be like looking constantly, like, oh, can I chill now? Do I need to break up more? Like, it'd be so cool to have
Oh
the
man, it like
power.
really, it's probably the first time that like a swim's been super enjoyable to watch. And he said they came on the coverage and they said, he just said, yeah, I sent a heap of DMs out in the last week or so. Talked to
Yeah,
Jonas.
Riddle.
He just said, I talked to Jonas. I talked to Martin Van Riel, like, trying to get some allies and really
Oh, that
make it
scares me.
hard. Nah, it's good. It's, I mean, it's
Love
not good for you,
that.
but yeah,
It's
so out of the
terrible. That's
water,
cool.
there was a group of about maybe 8 or 10, maybe a few more, and then a minute back was the Norwegians, Rudi von Berg, Matthew Marquardt, Jason West was in that group. Ditlev actually made that group, Nick Thompson, and then another like Backergaard. And then another 30 seconds back was Gustav, Patrick Lang, and Hogan Haugen and a few others. So like they're all within 2 minutes. And on a course like that, I mean, yeah, they go through town and 2 minutes can be made up a lot easier there than it would be in Hawaii, right? So yeah, it was, I
Yeah,
think.
but in the moment that you miss that front pack and you're scrambling and you're like, oh my God, I'm third pack or whatever, the athletes, they look chilled and like, oh, it's all part of the plan, but they'd be freaking out. Like, I know from my experience, when I see people on the bike already and off, I'm like, oh my God. You're like, most blokes are like scrambling, like, oh no, what's happening here? So when I looked at them, I was looking at it from my perspective, like, oh, you're 2 minutes back. This sucks. You're third group. Like, what? But then the freaks, the good ones, like, the Norwegians and Laidlaws and all of that, they must have rode up to groups so many times that those ones in particular are like, oh, should be fine. Whereas like
Yeah, so
the rest of us who have insecurities probably
I think that comes with
probably struggle with
experience too, though. I think it comes with experience, especially in Hawaii. I mean, you've only got to have watched it lots of times, right, Clint? And it's different to Nice, where the temperatures potentially aren't going to lead to as many blow-ups on the run. But in Hawaii, you see people like Patrick could be 20 minutes back, and he could be on the podium. It's happened time and time again. Whereas I think for this race, yeah, you're right. There is a bit of a bit more of an incentive, I think, to, okay, I've got to try and get back to these guys because the chances are they're not going to blow up on the run.
I didn't get a chance, Reid, to look at it, but I did, as in I wanted to look at Hawaii last year compared to Nice, but there was 12 240 marathons or lower in Nice. So like I don't think you'd see that many sub 240 or lower in Hawaii because of what you said, right? So like it's yeah, it certainly lends itself to that. As they came out of the water, one thing that was like noticeable was Laidlaw was on the back of the second group. So he's about 2.5 minutes back and just looked like if you gave me 100 grand and said, is he finishing? Absolutely not. That was a safe bet. He's head, like he was jogging along, head, like he didn't look like he was in it, pulling a few, not enjoying kind of faces. Took ages through transition. And so it was like, oh, his day's done. And to come back to where he eventually ended up was ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, the commentators are even saying it doesn't look like he has any interest in pushing this or going for it. And then to his credit, and I like my admiration for him as an athlete has obviously gone through the roof with the way he fought back. We know that as the bike played out, it came together for a few guys. Some of the strongest cyclists in the sport, I think, really came through and made their mark. You had like Nick Thompson, we had Laidlaw ended up catching them at, I think, about 100 kilometers, 110 kilometers. And I was so impressed with that, just to not give in and try and get back. Salzburg, is that how you spell it? Oh, Schomburg, sorry. Ditlev was
Schomburg, yeah.
there. You had
So
Gustav,
they,
Blumen,
th
Riddle,
those
Van
two,
Riel.
yeah, as they went out onto the bike, like I thought Ditlev was close and Schomburg, like Schomburg in Frankfurt just got to the front and just went, see you later until his bike fell apart. But like looking at that, if you looked at the playbook from Frankfurt, I was like, all right, well, he's going to go off the front and really explode this. But he was, in the end, didn't ride as well as we kind of thought he may. And then Ditlev got there and then they went through a split and Nick put about a minute into him in 10K or something. I was like, oh, this was not on my bingo cards today, watching Nick ride that like time into Ditlev. And it was super impressive. Nick, like shout out to him. That was in
Oh,
like he was
yeah. What about
so
his
strong.
descending skills too? Like, there was two that dropped off the pack, but Nick was one of the ones. And I'm like, just an Aussie can descend. Like, no chance half the pros in Australia could keep up with the way they were right. Like, I was impressed with the way they descended, took the corners. There's a lot of skill there, and Nick was just easily keeping up. And through those, that time when there's a no overtaking and you had to go through all these barriers, I was like, all right, well, that'd be my race over, but this is impressive watching him do it with ease.
He put it
Yeah, I
looked
mean,
like you go,
the thing
Pete.
about Nick is like, yeah, he can descend, and the fact that he could even go up the hill fast with the size of those kahunas he's got, because the power to weight has to be so high.
Mate,
But
he said.
he's always been such a ballsy athlete. You know, like there's never, it's, you know, we've watched him race himself into the, like where we've been in Busso, Clinton, being like, oh, his race is done. Like he is overbiked that. I said the same in Cairns. Oh, he looks like he's absolutely cooked himself. And then he just hangs in there, he grits his teeth, and he hasn't, you know, a really astonishing race finishing inside the top 10. Was he seventh in the end?
Yeah, seventh. But I saw a post-race interview and he
Sixth.
said 360 watts for 55 minutes up the climb. He is not a big individual either. So that's
No.
I kind of stopped, did some maths and was just like, okay, that's like that is I mean that's obviously what you've got to do to ride with those guys and stay there. But yeah, I think he made up 30 seconds on Laidlaw on the descent, which is so cool that like he did say prior to the race that he'd ridden it more than 10 times because they'd been there a long time. So it's kind of lends itself to what we said. It's very hard to just go to a place like that cold and think you're going to be able to mix it. But yeah, super dynamic ride, seeing a lot of people go out the back. Like it's just one thing I noticed is like the guys who used to I don't really want to single out people, but they're strong bikers who used to be back a fair way. They were together. Like there was a good group of, like, say, Ben, Cam, Sam Long, a few others in that group, but they just didn't make up much time. Like the front of the race is so strong now that you kind of need to be close. Otherwise, you just seem they're just not making up time.
Yeah. I think that what was interesting too was just how smooth some of those riders looked on that climb. Like if they're holding 350 watts, I actually thought Sam Laidlow looked like he was really, it didn't look easy. And I thought, oh, that's going to come back to really hurt him. And, you know, it just shows how good he is that he can, on a bad day, he can still be right up there. But, you know, you looked at Blumenfeld, looked at Gustav, they were just silky smooth with their pedaling. So yeah, it was impressive. And obviously that when you see riders going, like looking that smooth, Martin van Riel looks super smooth as well. Like the cadence wasn't that low. You know that a good run is likely as well, because they're just not, they don't have to, I guess, muscle their way through the ride. Yeah, if I was watching that, I thought Sam Laidlow is rocking, his cadence is low, this is going to lead to a 3-hour run, but it didn't. But yeah, a lot of the other guys, they just looked like they're going to run well off this.
The Norwegians, I mean, they were just so patient too. You know, the gaps had opened a little bit and they just kind of let it happen and then ride their way back on. And I think that Nick did, from the splits and from the coverage we saw, it looked like Nick did a lot of work when it was needed. You know, a gap would come and he'd kind of go and sort it. And then I guess if you're going to go and run a 2:29, you don't really have to worry about someone 90 seconds up the road. But yeah, they all ended up together, right? So Van Riel, Laidlow, the three Norwegians, Nick, and I think that was it off the bike.
Couple of quick things before we move on to the run, Clint. Just how forward all the positions are getting. And we've even got new bikes coming out now. And still, all of those top guys, they still would have had to get adapter pieces to get the front end forward enough to make it work. So it'll be interesting. I mean, it should have already happened, but it'll be interesting if bike brands start to actually go to the geometry that everyone's starting to move to. It's as a, you know, yeah, as a coach.
Isn't the UCI going closer? Like, so
the UCI, you're not allowed to have your saddle position has to be 5 centimeters behind the bottom bracket. So they have, it's not that it's faster. They just have to comply to those rules. Whereas in triathlon, you can jam it all the way forward and extend the front end out. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the geometry of new bikes.
The other one, like back to the bikes and then also the descending, like the people who looked most comfortable are the ones who aren't stacked out crazy on the descents. Like Nick is very low because he's a small dude on a bit bigger frame. So he's got almost no stack on his extensions. Yep. And Gustav's the same. He's on the Trinity, not the Kadex, and he doesn't have much stack at all in the front. So when they're actually, they don't have that extra weight above, and you know, the extra stack with extra bottles, I'll go down a rabbit hole here, but it does change the way that bikes handle. So to see less stack, and yeah, it would be a lot easier for people if they didn't have to go and go crazy in the front end up and out.
Yeah. One of the comments from, maybe it was, I thought actually, first of all, with the commentary, I thought it was awesome when they flicked to Fraser Cartmell and Crowe. I thought they add a really nice contrast to the US commentary team. I think that's something that Ironman could potentially look at, is just having those duos to sort of swap off a little bit. Yeah, because I think Fraser's insights are always really good. Fraser did say, it's interesting, that, pointing out that some of the bigger guys are doing really well because the power versus weight was against them. But when you have to factor in a time trial bike, bottles, it's actually very rare that the bigger guys tend to ride the climbs really well, because the percentage of that weight of the bike and the bottles is actually a lot lower of their, you know, as their body weight compared to some of the lighter guys like Patrick Lang. It's a lot of bike and bottle, a lot of weight he has to take up hill for his size. So yeah, I think you see that sort of play out, that it's not like cycling where they're all on 6 kilo bikes, getting a, you know, a bottle every now and then from a domestique. So yeah, I don't, that was probably the only thing I was thinking, oh, you know, that probably the physics isn't quite what people think, because we've always seen the bigger guys ride really well on the climbs. Any surprises there for you guys, I guess, towards, yeah, overall from the bike leg,
Steve?
Nah, yeah, it'll make sense, I guess. Yeah, I wasn't surprised by it. But yeah, I just like was it was funny to hear Lauren's perspective. She goes, "Oh, so what happened?" And I saw I was 1, 2, 3 Norwegian. She goes, "Boring." I was like, "What?" So that's someone who doesn't care about triathlon or watch it at all. And she goes, "Oh, so it was just domination." I'm like, "No, I wouldn't say that, but yeah, I guess it was on the run." But
When that, I mean, any surprises, Reid, was probably what I said a bit earlier, is that the Uber bikers just seem to not make any ground on the
that's
front of
not
the
a
race.
surprise by now, is it? Like by now we're like,
Oh,
oh yeah, they kind of like Cam Worth hasn't rode through the groups.
but I think at a race like that, isn't it a bit like, and it's more so because they were together, Steve. Like there was four or five like guys who have
Oh,
led
right.
races off the bike, and like you think, oh, there's some firepower there, and like ego, group dynamics, like throw the dice, see what happens. You'd think that some of them would just be like, you know what, we're 12 minutes back. Like if I don't just throw the dice and try and get
Oh,
towards the
yeah.
front of the race, then there's just, you know, and it does like lead to a bigger question, I guess, of like, how long since someone's been more than 3 minutes back out of the water and won a world title? Like I think Sebi 2014, and before that it would have been Norman in 2004. So like it's the to see them 7, 8, 9 minutes back is like, yeah, I wonder what the oh, yeah, maybe
Did
Hawaii
Cam
kind
Worth
of, but
I just think the top guys now are just so well rounded. The depth
yeah.
at that top end is so strong. You know, like you would have your exceptional athlete in the past, and but now you just have there's just five or six of them. So yeah, I think, you know, even when you look at the run times, you factor in when you look historically, like let's take 5% for the shoes, it's still super fast running for those top guys. You know, 230 becomes a 236 or 7 or maybe 5, what depending on how much advantage they get from the shoes. That's still crazy fast, you know. So yeah, it's phenomenal. I do think that with the Norwegian method, you know, people love to talk about their training and this and that. I think we saw Jan Frodeno change the landscape because he was the first pro to really be invested himself and be like pro at a whole other level of professionalism. And I think the Norwegians have that sort of support. They've set up that system. And I think that's sometimes forgotten that, okay, there's a lot of guys probably doing very similar training, but then they're off doing shopping. They're doing their laundry. They might be, you know, they don't have someone giving them a massage straight. I don't know what the Norwegian exact situation is, but we do know they get a lot of support. And then, of course, from their federation. And then, of course, once you get that sponsorships rolling, they've also got that level of financial support too. And so I think what we're seeing is not just the Norwegian method in training, but I think it's that level of professionalism that a lot of guys just won't have that opportunity to get. You know, and that's where I think, you know, credit really has to go to Jan, because it wasn't like he didn't have a team around him that was just supplied by a federation. He actually just reinvested all his own money to create that team, create that situation. And as you saw, like he just, you know, was one of the became, you know, the greatest, if you know, of one of the greatest of this generation for sure. So talk me through the run, Clint, early on, who looked good?
All in together, they just one thing to note, like transition was super long. It was that was like, you know, I must be getting old because watching them run barefoot for so long was like, oh, there goes my calf or Achilles or something. But yeah, them so far through, they didn't look near as rubbish as you see them. You know how like you see footage in Hawaii where everyone's just like so cooked and they look like terrified of what they're about to go and do. They looked like a little bit more composed. Everyone threw together. I guess like back to what you said about Laidlaw, Reedy, like of that front group. So we had Van Riel, the Norwegians, Laidlaw and Nick, like Laidlaw probably should have just done his own thing, right? I mean, like he can do whatever he wants because he's a world champion, but like he took the race and he was at the front. Like you got guys running behind you who have run like fastest marathons at every race they've done this year, and he still just went, you know what, let's go. Him and Van Riel ripped in at the start. I think they had about 30 seconds out of transition and got going pretty well. Gustav looked beautiful. It was, I don't know. Did you see the start of the run, Steve? Gustav, like, that was like the best, I think, form-wise I've seen Gustav look running. It was so good to watch.
He's real soft on the ground, isn't he? But he's also got a K bend, which is not meant to be good, but it works so well. Like Christian, on the other hand, just trudges along.
Yeah,
so Gustav, I think he looks good because they're running together.
What's a K bend?
Oh, like
he's hinged at the hips.
Yeah, he's hinged at the hips, and you're meant to lean, not. In that way, yeah. Anyway,
you're a little bit like that though, Steve.
I know it sucks. Yeah. I can't help it. I've tried forever to stop.
Well, you're not running bad, so maybe everyone should be hinging.
Laidlow Van Riel about 30 seconds, maybe even 40 at one point. Then they had the two Norwegians, and then Kasper, maybe 50 seconds, just kind of didn't go stupid at the start, and then Gustav. Christian got to the front and it kind of slowed a little bit. They kind of looked around a little bit, but Sam still kept kind of leading for most of, I think it would have been about the first 15 or so Ks. And then Kasper finally, because they played a little bit of cat and mouse, got back onto the group, and there was a group of five, which I don't think we see photos from maybe like Cam Brown, Luke Van Leerd, Peter Reed back in the day when there was three together, or Max and the two Norwegians. But I don't think we've ever seen five at the front of a race really like hurting each other. It was so...
Who could all win, you know? Yeah.
It was
and
so...
And especially off,
so
off a course like that, if it's a flat course, you expect it, because someone could have sat in the whole way, saved 20% on the bike and made it to the end of the bike. But they've all had to ride, you know, like It's pretty amazing.
Can you bet on triathlon yet? Because I would bet on Gustav right now for next year in Kona, and I would put, I don't have any money, but I'd put heaps on it if I had money.
you can. This is a question that came through our circle chat on the weekend, Steve. You can, but it's through a UK betting agency. And
okay, still the same as the last Olympics, damn.
Yeah, I think you can do top fives or top threes and wins. But he looked so good form-wise. Christian, he actually tried to make Christian kind of share the load into, because there was a solid headwind from what we could see. He tried to make Christian share the load into the wind and kind of pulled over to the side, and Christian kind of went to the front for less than a minute and then literally pulled over the side and pretended he was looking back for Kasper, and Gustav had to go back to the front. So it was obviously...
The commentators were ripping in a bit, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I'm here for it. You know, they should call a spade a spade. And just...
So they were ripping Clement Fuchs. I missed that bit.
Yeah.
They should.
Calling it how it was. Yeah, like their training partners. I mean, you know, how much of it is... mind games, and how much of it is actually that, and turns out like he did struggle towards the end. But the same thing happened when Max and
it reminded me of that.
Yeah.
These are my feet.
Right.
I am on Gustav's feet. And then he tried to trip Max up or something.
Yeah.
So, just see that.
Yeah, there's been a lot of stories about that. It's a shame because, you know, you want your champ, like, this is why I respect Gustav so much. Martin Van Riel is a great guy. Laidlow, obviously. But then, there's definitely a lot of stories out there, Blumenfeld, just not being sportsmanlike when he's out there on the course. So it's a bit disappointing.
Well, it was good to see him come third then, Reid. first to drop off the group, I think, was Van Riel, which was surprising. He still looked good, but I think you could it's cool to watch when they're racing. Like, you could see him, he's looking at his watch, he's staying on the back of the group, looking at his watch, he's clearly having that conversation in his head of, this is too high, you know, this is too high, I'm running too fast, and he finally let them go a little bit. Then I think Gustav dropped a few quick Ks, and those two just went. And yet again, Kasper just did his thing steadily. Just dosed his effort and got to them, and then the rest is history, so they say.
You talked about guys to watch for next year, Steve, and for me, I think Nick Thompson, now that he will have more sponsorship, more financial support, in my mind, he can, yeah, I mean, it depends. Everyone handles success a bit differently. You know, I was never, once I started making a lot of money, I sort of, my professionalism dropped off. But then, but you know, if he stays hungry and he invests in the right things, like, and sets himself up to have a more, you know, pro existence, because I'd be certain that his sponsorship, like, there's not a lot out there. Like, the top guys are doing really well. There's a heap of prize money out there. But then if you go that path, you've also got to race your ass off all year to get the prize money. And then you might compromise, like, the biggest day for the long course guys in a race like this. So it's a hard existence. But once they're sort of in the conversation for winning world champs, like Nick is now, that's when things really change. So
I think he'll be sweet either way, because him and Jamie Riddle and a few others have had this, like, they've got this really fun time in their life, I reckon, where they're at the right age. They've got partners, I reckon, but not ready for kids or marriage yet. And they've got a few more years left still to do what the Norwegians are doing in a less professional, looks less professional manner, but that's what all you need is just friends training heaps. So just having fun.
Don't you think, but like, that'll get you to maybe seventh in the world. And then you get to the point where it's like, I mean, you guys know, like, I've never been in that scenario, but like, you get to a point where it's like, you know, anything worth having, like, business, whatever, is super hard, right? And so, like, him and, like, so eighth was Matthew Marquardt. He had the same dramas with his back, but like, he still works full time. Like, at some point you've got to look at it, like, in their scenario and go, how much am I willing to be a hermit and live with my training partner and all that?
I don't know though, if Nick would, you know, like I have to use myself as an example. If I take anything too seriously, I get really bad results. Because if you do one thing, it spirals and you're just like, well, I might as well do this. Oh, I'll cut alcohol. I'll do this. And then you're not yourself. You're not happy. Whereas Nick's happy, training, having fun, and the pressure's not on, because he's just like, well, I'm here with my mate and we're going to have a laugh during the race afterwards before. He doesn't take it too seriously, but as soon as he takes it a little bit more seriously, it could get in his head. So I think the professionalism level that they're at is probably what will result in the best thing. So if you get in his head, saying more.
I guess what I'm saying though, Steve, is more like, okay, can he base himself at a place where he's happy with a few friends, or pay for a training partner to be there that he really enjoys training with, and, you know, not do any coaching? I remember, like, it was, I think I'd got fifth at World Champs and I said, all right, that's my tipping point. I'm not coaching 25 athletes anymore. And like, you have to take that risk of like, okay, now I'm going to, that's $1,500 a week or two that I won't have, but I've just got to back myself from here. And I think he's at that point where he's got to, it doesn't need to stop having fun, but like, you have to, if you've got something that's taking 6 or 7 hours a week out of your training and recovery, or even just using up a lot of mental space, you're right. Like, it's super hard. They're at the perfect time. And, you know, next minute he could have a kid and then everything changes, you know? So I think I'd love to see Nick just fully commit a couple of years. For me personally, when we're talking about Jamie Riddle, Jamie's so young, he's so fast, he's so talented. I think the training is so different for Ironman compared to 70.3s. I'd love to see Jamie just hold back on Ironman racing. I mean, I said the same thing to him after Cairns. I said, man, you don't need to rush this. Like, he's only going to get better and better at the Ironman distance. And we know how fast the 70.3 distance is. Like, use that God-given speed that you've got and the endurance you've built up from...
Truly God-given.
What's that?
It's a God reference, because Jamie's a heavily religious man. on that note, Reid, like, he's also so young that there's that bright, shiny thing now called the T100, you know, that he can go and get a good contract. And if he races that well, make more money because he's racing often, as opposed to, you know, killing yourself for 3 Ironmans a year. And it's kind of, yeah. So it makes perfect sense. I remember both you and Apo, like, early on saying, like, you can do a lot more 70.3s and kind of keep the income, which then the stress is lower than going and doing 16 weeks work for maybe getting paid, you know? So,
yeah. And it's the enjoyment factor too. Like, there's no, even on a good Ironman day, you are still, it's a long time out there suffering, you know, whereas 70.3s, he could genuinely be like really enjoying the racing. I think it, I mean, ultimately it's obviously totally up to him, but I just think when you're that young, I think you can really, you can burn yourself out with too much of this Ironman racing at such a young age. And if he was a bit more of a diesel or didn't have that natural speed, I'd be like, you know, this is his game. But yeah, I mean, it's awesome that we've got some. I think Martin Renville is the other one that I'd really back for a top Kona performance next year. I think he'll learn potentially from mispacing the start of the run. I think, you know, it's so easy to get caught up in, you know, running alongside the front guys, and especially those guys that come from ITU racing. It's like you don't let people go. But we know in Ironman racing, you can. Like, it's just play your own cards and let the run play out like Casper did.
He did say that he rolled his ankle pretty badly in the last week or so before the race and didn't, like, couldn't really taper as designed. So yeah, another thing that may or may not have affected, but regardless, yeah, Reed, he, like, when you can swim that well, surely the four or five guys who are at the front of that race will now look at that and go, okay, well, let's just not play silly buggers next year in Hawaii. Let's drag race together to first turn and then really try and bust the race up. Because if they can get the media bikes out of town and a minute up the road.
Yeah. I think that faster swim in Kona makes a lot more sense, and they can set themselves up.
So obviously they'll all be listening. So that's just some free advice. We'll let you guys go and do with that what you will. Yeah. Any other notes or like any other athletes who stood out for you guys?
I think Rudy Von Berg and Sam Long, they're both amazing athletes, busy schedules. I wouldn't, you know, just because it's 13th and 14th in that field, traveling to the race, it's still a great performance. I think that both of those guys, you know, should really focus on Kona next year. I think sometimes we've seen it a lot, Clint, where someone goes from in that 10th to 15th position and then next year they've made some adjustments and they're on the podium in Kona. So I think for Cam Wirth's an interesting one for me. Everyone would always say to me, because they know that we're quite close, is like, oh, how's Cam going to go? I mean, age comes for everyone eventually, right? And he's 42 now, 43. You know, a lot of guys that are over in Girona get the joy of training with him. He's always very generous with his time and helping people out. And he's, you know, he's a good dad. He's doing his, going to his son's sport. I think his son's got sport every single day. And as Steve mentioned, once you start to have to really split your attention, you might be happier in life. You might, it's not a bad thing, but it does, when you're racing the very best in the world, it makes it hard to compete for sure.
If you could.
Did you guys notice with Cam Wirth that he actually made up time on the descent, being a pure, like, you know, coming from cycling? Like, was there an advantage, or the other guys still pretty skilled?
I didn't see, because I know this sounds cruel, but he was so far back that I didn't pay attention to the other guys in that section.
But, well, when you said, did anyone else come out? I'm like, well, they don't film anyone else but the front.
One thing, like, every time I see that guy on a bike, he is just so, it's probably been a while since someone's called Cam Wirth beautiful, but him on a bike, he just looks like it's one piece of machinery. Oh, like, he's stuck to that
stable
thing.
So stable, no rocking, beautiful angles.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just lucky that the sunnies and helmet cover his face.
a hypothetical for you. I don't know. Have you got the results in front of you guys?
Yep.
Right, Reed, if you could have 10th and below, you can choose one of those guys to coach for next year's Hawaii. Who would you choose? You cannot answer it if you want, but it's
I guess for me, it's like, who's going to be really stuck in their ways? Like, it's very tough when someone's been successful to potentially coach someone who doesn't really want to change. So I don't, and also you need to, whenever I talk to pros, I like to be able to access their training peaks, have a look at what they're doing, see if they've got any test data. And then I go, okay, cool. There's some really big holes here. Let's work together. And sometimes I'll look through everything and like, I'll go, I don't really know maybe like I don't really see the clear path to getting better, so I don't really jump on board. You know, I won't name names, but I've spoken to, you know, guys that have got top 10 in this actual race before, and I knew very quickly that there was a set way they were going to do things, and I didn't really know how to, yeah, if they're not, yeah, that even how and even then I wasn't sure where the big gaps were. You know, like what are we going to do differently? Whereas sometimes, you know, like with Apo and Ironman, I was like, I know what we need to do, you know, and so it's, yeah, I don't, it's a hard one to answer without knowing their training and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's a, when you asked that, I honestly thought you were about to say fuck one, kill one, marry one. I was like, let's
they're
do that.
Dudes, mate. No.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Let's play that one.
Oh my
God. I'm marrying Gustav.
Good to have you back, Stephen.
I'm going to kill Blumenfeld. And I'm going to make love to...
Oh, we're doing
Jamie,
this.
Jamie,
I'll leave
Jamie's
that one
hot.
Out.
You'd rather kill someone than fuck someone?
Why is that? Yeah, I'll knock a few people off.
Oh, some of your best work, Steve. The commentary read, I didn't get to add it before, and I really wanted to because Fraser and Crowe, and Crowe specifically got thrown under the bus a bit a few times. Like the race was really starting to unfold, and then they went, and now we're going to cross to Crowe, who has so-and-so, and we're going to talk about the future of the sport or something. It's like, that's, you know, that people don't want to hear that at the moment. They want to see what's happening in the race. So there's a few times where he really got thrown a hospital pass, and he did really well with it. So it was, fanboy, but yeah, he was still doing a very, very, very good job.
Yeah, I think he's good. I love that just the way he's a bit more like watching test match cricket with good insights rather than trying to pump up the situation the whole time. It's just, oh, that's pretty, you know, that's interesting. And Fraser's great as well. And I think they do a good job. I think people love to criticize, and it's so much harder than what people would realize. Like, you're not talking about a play-by-play situation, so you've really got to, it's a tricky one. I think everyone does a reasonable job. I think it's harder than I think it's hard.
I agree with you, Didi.
Any Steve, any kind of watching it, itchy feet, or are you just like, oh, yuck,
you probably shouldn't. I've said I don't know. It was probably the first time all year I've gone, that's pretty cool. Other than that, it's been a bit of a put off seeing anything. But because I know what goes into it. But then the only thing that put me off again was seeing Casper finish and love, you know, grab that tape. And I was like, oh, that's great. That's cool. And then I was like, oh, God, the amount of work that's gone into that. The amount of sacrifice. I just imagined, oh, yeah, anything's possible. Good on him. And then I was like, oh, gosh. I just was like talking to Lauren over a coffee this morning. She goes, did you get jealous? So I was like, a little bit. But then I just quickly went back to reality and I was like, it's just not realistic. The sacrifices to become the best in the world are just insane. So my triathlon, I'm aware now. I started at 23. I'm now 34. And it's like,
you know, you're getting
the
older,
sacrifices
you don't know
that
you
I
are.
Can make. Yeah, it was recent. But the sacrifices I can make, it's not at all realistic. You know, as we just talked about, the people that are in the perfect time to give everything to it, and unless you want to sacrifice your family time as well, everything, you're not going to be a world champ. So, or have everyone affected around you as in they're fully dedicated. So yeah, it's just not realistic. Like I could go win Australian races with the amount that I'm willing to sacrifice. And I have to settle with that. It's only possible if you go all in, completely all in. Like, there's so much sacrifice.
Jack wanted to do Jack from the Triathlon Hour wanted to do a podcast with Joe Skipper and I and talk about the differences in physiology as to why Joe was, you know, I was dominant at 70.3s, why Joe's dominant at Ironman, why we couldn't quite nail it the other way around. And I was basically like, it's not physiology. It was just, I had my whole pro career, I had kids, you know, like I couldn't dedicate 30 hours a week to training. It just wasn't possible with managing, with a working wife and kids and everything like that. I don't think it was necessarily, might have been partly mindset, like, but you're right. Like, it's a different level at that Ironman World Champs level. If you want to be going like those guys doing, you know, sub 8 hours, 8 hours on a course that really is so incredibly hard, you can't do that off 20 hours a week. We're 70.3. Back then, at least, it was feasible to be a top 70.3 racer on 25 hours a week or less. But but even then, the amount of sacrifices, like, I was a psychopath. Like, I would not eat, you know, like, I didn't drink. I wouldn't eat. The diet I ate was so clean. It was like, it got to the point where I was obviously not enjoying it. But to get to that level was so much sacrifice and so much. And then you looked at Ironman racing when I was finally ready for that. You've got three kids and you're like, I can't do this.
One that kind of never really resonated until now, I have a little human read, is you saying that you used to sit across the other side of the room to read books to your kids instead of laying in bed with them before races because you didn't want to get sick. Like, that's, you know, people talk about working long hours or whatever. That's just brutal. Like, not being, yeah.
Not the other side of the room, but I'd sit at the end of the bed.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like,
that's what I got sick of the most as well. Like, I want to just kiss her when she's got snot or not. Like, so this year's been nice. I've had every virus under the sun, but I haven't cared. I didn't give a shit, but I was an anxious mess 24/7. Everything, every beer matters, because if that virus is hanging around in the house, you can't have that beer. And I would still do it. And then I'd just go, fuck, again.
Mate, I used to beat myself up even if I needed a packet of chips or something. Like, I'd then be like going to bed going, why did I do that? You know, because we used to be so obsessed with weight, and I was like, it was a total head case. yeah, heaps normal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's move on.
That was,
yeah.
Well, that was a quick question that you asked. So,
yeah, we are going to get in the weeds of the therapy.
Can we? So that's pretty much a wrap on Nice. I think we can all say, like, I don't know if you can all say. I feel like it's sad that it's leaving Nice. I think it takes time for things to become historical and important, and it's a big commitment. I understand, like, Ironman needs to be able to sell entries to the world champs at the drop of a hat, and they could do that with Kona. But even if, yeah, it is what it is, it's just a bummer. I think it was a brilliant course.
I guess the one thing to add to that too, Reed, is that people can go there for the 70.3 Worlds. Like, a few people that we've got have already qualified. And I think, yeah, yesterday, watching that race was kind of, it probably does entice a fair few people. They look at it and go, you know what, that's kind of cool. I'm not going to get my fastest time ever, but it's scenic and it's a cool venue to go and race at.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I think we can touch on Sunny Coast. I had to duck back because Oscar's got pneumonia, so I didn't get to actually watch the race, but I was up there until the Arvo, Saturday Arvo. Jake Birtwistle got a nice win in the men's field. It was interesting. We did a little sweat test consult the day before, and I think a lot of these guys that come from ITU, I think it's just they're a bit blasé about certain things like the hydration and fueling. So it was really cool to hang with him. Such a nice guy. And yeah, I really think he can keep doing big things. It was pretty much the same runtime as you've put out there, I think, Steve. But yeah, they rode quick, swam quick. And
that's Josh Ferris in second. He was injury plagued for an extended period. Ryan, from 3D Bike Fit, works with him, does a lot of his cycling training, and he's gonna go places. He's really getting a good role on now that he can get consistent. So he actually, Ryan said you should get him on at some point, so we probably should chat to him at some point, because
yeah, we definitely should. I think you see too, like, him racing Airlie Beach, you know, that he won that race. I think it's good. He had race conditioning in his legs. I think as soon as he stopped training with Burks, he's gotten good. Nah, just jokes.
And on the women's side.
Sorry, Ellie. Just go through second, third. Johan Collin. I don't actually even know who Johan is. Is he Australian?
No idea.
Yeah, I think so. And he's been around a while. I'm pretty sure I've seen that name on start lists. It's one of those names where, you know, Reedy, you would be the same. You'd look down the start list. You wouldn't look further than top five because you need to just check what you're in for. And then you don't really take notice. But I think he's been around on these lists for a few years, actually. And he's on a podium recently as well. So he's getting really strong. I'm pretty sure he's a great biker. I know just as little other than that, as much as you guys know, but I think he's going to keep improving. Sounds like he's looks like from this year's racing, if you looked at his results, he's stepped up a big, I don't know how to say that, a big step.
Yeah. He's stepped up a big
step. Quick shout out to my boy. So there was a couple of RPGers racing, but I was really stoked to see Bailey Tuddenham's first pro race and just stuck to the plan well. Swam, got third out of the water. Some few changes there that just happy, and he kept his head. And, you know, I think when he raced Jake in Geelong, he was 24 minutes behind him. Now he's only 9 minutes back. So watch that young fella. Nathan Dortman. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, just on Bailey, like, some pros spend their whole life trying to get to the front of the race to like be part of it. And he's like, yeah, got to be part of it for swim bike, and he'll only get better at like, it's so enjoyable to watch Reed, the young pup just ripping into it. And hopefully, just the progression, obviously you hope for is just, he lasts further into the run longer and longer and longer till he grabs that tape with aggression.
Well, he's running he's making big gains, 2 or 3 minutes quicker on the run. Hadn't made the front pack in any of the shorter races he'd done in the pro field, and got on the toot performance. Said he felt effortless. that's no joke. You can ask him. And then Clint on the women's side.
Ellie Salthouse doing what Ellie Salthouse does. Just races in Australia and seems to go very, very well. Lottie in second, which is obviously on the way to Hawaii, no doubt. And then RPG girl, Penny Slater, under Liz, in third, on the way to Kona as well. So solid podium there. And they're all probably looking at further races along the way. So it's good to see them out there racing. And hopefully they can take that form and build from it into other races.
And before we get to Steve's Sydney Marathon, Apo, another win at Santa Cruz. The Apoconda's flying at the moment. We know that, you know, like a lot of athletes, there's that, once you get that confidence going, it makes the whole racing experience so much easier. Like, there's not, what used to sometimes kill the love of racing for me was just how anxious I'd get. And when you've got a few wins under your belt, that anxiety goes away and you're not having those sleepless nights leading into the race, the bank account's bulging, and then, but you just don't have the stress. It just keeps, and with Apo, we see it. Once he gets on a roll and he's doing it Apo's way, which is not the same volume that a lot of other pros have to do. He's a very fragile athlete, but he's going awesome, and he's had his fastest run in a couple of years, really. Just learning to, you know, pace it better. And
what did he run?
He ran a 1:12, but off the back of all-time best power in a 70.3. So yeah, he's getting faster, not slower. And yeah, it's been great to watch him just back enjoying racing and putting it all together.
Credit to you there, Tim Reid. He's I think we spoke about it on the on our platform RPG membership thing where we do the Q&As, and you were kind of like, it kind of perplexed me a little bit. So I asked you a few questions about how he just idles along at about, or not idles along, but he's not doing these massive builds where it's been about 6 weeks between each race, and you've managed it really well. Obviously it's a, you know, you guys had chat a fair bit, but 6 weeks between races and he just keeps having hit after hit after hit. So well done.
Yeah, it's a good combo. And I think, you know, we're in this, I think the racing can really, we use that as his deepest, you know, the real deep simulation sessions. We're not doing, sending him to the well in any training sessions. Every, you know, when you're racing regularly, you don't get that same muscle breakdown that you get when you've just that first race or two of the season. Speaking of muscle breakdown, Steve, a bit like you racing Sunny Coast before Sydney Marathon, sort of popped onto the schedule. Steve did the classic Stephen thing where he booked flights and everything for the whole wrong weekend after he decided to do
Amazing.
Sunny Coast.
Amazing.
And then, yeah, that's it. I
The
call it the Tim Reid tax, but Steve's got the same tax on everything.
ADD tax. Yeah, it was worse than that on the way home from Sunny Coast, I reckon it was. The lady goes, so I went alone, and I had booked it twice. And I was like, so sorry, I had to book it again. And then I must have forgotten that I booked it. It's been a tough period, by the way, sleep wise. So I'm not using that as an excuse. I'm an idiot. But I got to the return flight on, and then I was leaving again in 3 days with the girls for a family holiday now, not the race. And yeah, she goes, oh, you booked this twice. I'm like, what do you mean? And she goes, there's two seats for Steve McKenna. I'm like, fuck. So then and then I had all this baggage from the expo. This must have been Gold Coast, actually. So I've done that on two trips. Because I had all the expo stuff, but Lauren came over with me and then bailed from your 40th ready. And then so I had all the luggage and I'm like, oh, right. And that cost me $1,000 to get all the luggage home because the how many kilo I had 80 kilograms. So it turns out it was like nearly $1,000. And then I'm like, wait, so I got two tickets and my baggage is costing $1,000. And then she goes, I said, oh, can I just use my other ticket to put the weight on there so I don't have to spend $1,000 on baggage? She goes, no, you're not allowed to.
Oh,
What?
shout out to the airlines.
That's right. We've done 10 hours a day on our feet or more at the expo, and then Steve just burns all the profits. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, they refunded the second flight. That was one
Oh,
good
that's
thing.
good. Yeah.
Yeah, she felt really bad, but she
So
still charged me a
you did
thousand.
Sunny Coast, Steve, and you said like your quads were just absolutely cooked from that race. And then but you hung on for second, which was a great performance regardless. And then how are you feeling going into Sydney? Do you feel like you're on track for that? The initial conversation was you wanted to go top five Aussie at Sydney, given it was Australian champs, marathon champs. How are you? I can touch on it if you want, but how are you feeling going into it?
I didn't know really. I didn't know whether the quads got so destroyed that I was just going to feel them 10K in and then it would be a disaster on a hilly course, or whether it would benefit me. And my only experience was Ironman Australia, where I went on a stupid trail run to get a selfie at the top of Kosciuszko or whatever it was. And then 10 days later, I'm still sore from that trail run coming back down. And then I won Ironman Australia because my quads were, torn up and recovered just in time. And I felt like in that last bit of the run, the quads were still good and everyone else seemed to be cramping and whatnot. So yeah, this is twice now where it's paid off getting a huge amount of quad pain. So I think what I'll do, I wouldn't risk doing a marathon a month out again, but if I ever tried to get a really good time in a marathon again, I'd probably do a really, go to the well in a half about 4 weeks out, and try to get really, maybe do a hilly one or just try to get some quad pain, or do some downhill running. Yeah, it seems to have paid off on a hilly course. I ran a similar time to what I was doing on dead flat courses, and yeah, but anyway, feeling and the prep going in, it's just nothing compared to off the back of summer. There's just been, everyone in Australia has had this like 3 month cough, and yeah, so I've done like 95K on average for the 14 weeks leading into Sydney, and it's just not enough. But it's as much as I could get. I do 140, and then I'd do like next to nothing the
Is
next
it
week.
not
So
enough? I mean, you're also doing a little bit of swimming, some biking, and you probably, I would say that 218 is the equivalent of a 215 on a flat course. So you have improved, and I think you look like you're in pretty good shape after the race. So like I think obviously to go to the next level, yeah, you might need to do more, but for your goal, you hit the goal, you got top five. I think
yeah, true. Yeah,
as
for
a
my goal,
You're a
yeah,
classic
it was
pro
good.
where
Yeah, you're
it's
chasing the
nothing's ever
dragon,
good
mate.
enough.
Yeah, you're absolutely
Yeah,
chasing the
well,
dragon.
I was second female, so I wasn't that.
But that's
I
the
wanted to
best,
win.
very best in the world.
And then on that too, but Steve, like you say, oh, you need to do more, or do you just need to keep that consistent 95 for another build and you'll be even better? So it's
You're right. And the swim and bike obviously is a huge advantage, and then you don't get injured. So it maybe it is more consistent doing 120K rather than if I shoot for 170, like I see the blokes doing, I don't think I'll handle that anyway.
And we should say, Steve, we've got programs in the triathlon. If you search Tim Reed training plans, we've got effectively a very similar structure to what you did for your marathon prep. For those that want to do marathon prep, minimize the chance of injury, and do some triathlon maintenance, those programs are actually probably our best sellers out of all, because I think everyone who tries to do a marathon tends to break down. So that's in there. Use the code NERD. What's the code,
I
Steve?
think it's just nerd. I reckon it's just
Nerd. And
nerd.
you'll get, I think it's 20% off.
Because we came up with that code when I said I just want to do that marathon plan with cross training, and you were like, sweet, let's do it. And it's worked really well because I like swimming and biking, don't want to stop. And it's a huge advantage. Lots of it's hypoxic just to get a little bit more fit. And the bike riding, there's been some efforts, which I definitely wouldn't have done unless there was a program telling me to do them.
Yeah, that's
But
it.
the quad pain again.
Yeah, we do. I mean, we do a lot of the VO2 max work. We'll do that on the bike, in the pool. Just take the chance. We know that, you need those faster intervals, and I think it's a safer way to do it, especially early on in the plan. We just steer clear of that raw speed. Now, Clint, anything else we need to discuss? Oh, well done again, Steve. I think you play it down, but for any of us mere mortals, we are like amazed at that ability to run a marathon that fast.
And run a marathon, very well dosed splits. It was something to be, it was pretty cool to look through the splits and see how even you were. Shout out to Sam Appleton too. Steve did a thing where he was giving away a heap of prizes if you guessed his time, and Appo guessed it. So that
That's
was pretty.
exactly what my guess would have been too. When I saw Apo's
Really?
answer, like, I reckon he's got it because I just knew, I reckon I could go a bit quicker if I pace it and negative split it. I learned a bit at Sunny Coast about pacing. And then I was like, so I don't think I'll go any quicker. I think I'll just do the exact same time as Sunny Coast, but on a hilly course. So technically it's better, but I don't think, so he just thought the exact same thing. He's like, oh, the hills, yeah, I think he'll go quicker, but yeah.
And we should also touch on, Steve, that you've now got like some really good products coming for marathon racing with Nerd. So there's do you want to talk about that quickly before we wrap it up?
Yeah, we've got a reverse belt that I've worked on for ages, which is like, the cycling bottle that you can just chuck in the reverse. That's selling really well already since launching. And then few marathon belts on the way where they'll just hold like in reverse a 200 or a 300. You guys only got to use the prototypes, unfortunately. And yeah, like this is the process. That's the first prototype that you guys got to use, and there's some issues, and then we send it back, get a few people to use it again, and it's going to take about six sample runs to get to it to the end. But yeah, anyway, Apo winning that prize is awesome because I've been meaning to send him heaps of belts. And yeah, this is now I have to. So it's a good way to get pull my finger out and actually send him some belts. And yeah, I think with the step up in we got a new manufacturer. They're like, making stuff for the biggest brands in the world. We finally found one we really like and trust, and the quality's just stepped up massively, and it's really exciting. There's no quality checking on our end now. We just know how good these belts are coming to us, and there's a few little improvements, and that's why I'm really confident to send them out to people like Apo and go like, yeah, anyway, they're getting better, and we
And
just still.
not only that, Steve, but it's just great to see the education around how important hydration is. It's finally happening. Like athletes are actually setting themselves up for better recovery, better performances, especially triathletes who have to do multiple sessions. People go, oh, you don't need it for an hour's run. I'm like, weigh yourself pre and post, see how you feel that hour on a summer's day, trying to work after a morning without. It's just, even 600
Oh, we
mil
did a case
makes a
study
difference.
on this. So I'll make this very, very quick. I ran an hour six times at 3:45 pace on a treadmill to make sure I'd lose a fair bit of sweat. Lost 2 liters each time. So in the second half, when I didn't fuel it, my heart rate skyrocketed. There was heaps of cardiac drift. In the times where I just took, I just pretended it was an MB600. It had 600 mil of fluid, 60 grams of carbs, and 500 milligrams of sodium. My heart rate went down 7 beats in the second 30 minutes. It was like insane. And then it just, that was the average over this, like, that was the average over the like 6 times we tested it. And then
part of that is also just core temp. So part of it's the fueling and hydration, but when those things get low, it's very hard to regulate core temperature. Right. And when your core temperature goes up, if you're staying the same pace, the heart rate goes up. So, yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense, and it's not quite, you don't have to be taking on as much as, you're not trying to replace what you're losing. It's not like the bike leg of an Ironman. It's, you know, we always say somewhere around 50 to 60% of your losses is a good target.
Well, then the recovery was interesting too. It was 3 beats lower overnight with the Oura Ring, and HRV was 20% improved on average. So
that's something that we seem to always have conversations with athletes about, is you can go and get through your hour run in the morning or whatever you're doing and go about your day. But you just, sometimes you're just like, I'm a bit off today. I'm pretty belted. And a lot of the time it's just because you haven't looked after yourself in that hour. So why not? But speaking of which, now would be the time. I fly out this weekend for Hawaii. If you're racing Hawaii and you are not carrying a hydration belt, I think it's like, especially in the age group race, like obviously pros have special needs, you can help yourself along the way, but it's just a silly, silly, silly way to attack that race.
Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to send you a heap of belts, Clint. You can be the little belt dealer over there.
I've already got, I think I've got two of each coming from Steve. So
no, but I mean, just if anyone does want one over there, I'm just Clint, and you do see him around, just go, oi, I need a belt.
What's good?
He's the heaps tan guy.
No, but really, like
one final point. Sorry, you go, Clint. Sorry.
Yeah, just before, like, I mean, people are looking to fly out anytime from like the end of this week until two or three weeks down the track. Like, you often forget these kind of things. If you haven't tried it, just order something. I mean, it should be a nerd belt, but, you know, look after yourself, because it can be a couple of kilometers between each aid station over there. And, you know, if you're running 5 minute Ks, 3:30 marathon, 10 minutes of just suffering in the heat, you're a fool if you don't look after yourself. So
yeah,
no, really.
Yeah. One final point on Nice was, I think, and Didi said it, she was like, oh, it's so hard to know. I'm sorry, because all the suits look the same, it's really hard to identify which athlete's which. Pro athletes out there, like, you need to be easily visible, like, have your own distinct style. Everyone in the same sort of Sam Laidlow look. It's, I don't know why I thought of that just then, but I was thinking, if I'm a pro, like, I was, when I was an average pro coming up, everyone knew it was me though, because I ran around like in a fluoro kit and budgies. I'm not saying they need to be in budgies, but like, you need to make yourself very visible so that people can go, cool, that's Blumenfeld, that's Gustav. Steve's never had to worry because, you know, he's the only guy who will never have a tan. Stands out from a distance.
Oh no, my nose stands out.
surely someone like, can will nerd sponsor someone if they go in a skin colored suit? I'm all about that. Even just the front, just full skin colored at the front would be very very impressive. But yeah, I agree, Reid. Like, I mean, Nick Thompson was in blue, but besides that, everyone else is just black and white with sponsors on there. It's just boring.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Great to catch up again. Sorry about the gap between recordings. Everyone's been flat out. Everyone's had sick kids, and it's just, we know that people are checking for the upload every single day. So
there's your fix.